Welcome to the political cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the show, the third and final hour of tonight's live installment. It is Saturday, May 16th, and we're coming to you once again from our flagship station, as always, AM 1380 WLRM Radio in Memphis, Tennessee, going out to our affiliate stations and satellite network, thanks to Liberty News Radio, and of course, streaming live on the internet at thepoliticalcesspool.org. We've covered a lot of ground tonight, continuing on into this third hour. We've had far too much fun. This is the fastest 3 hours of our week. And I tell you what, I'm just glad we do this on a volunteer basis, because I would feel so guilty actually getting paid to do this. Wouldn't you, Bill?
Absolutely. It wouldn't take money to do it.
It does take money to do it, and we're grateful for everyone who contributes and helps us continue on. And certainly we've made good on the investment. We are a listener-supported radio program, but I think you're getting more than your money's worth with the news that we continue to make, the London Times, Newsweek, CNN, so on and so forth. But the third hour tonight is going to be a little more positive, because we're going to be talking about outreach and public appearances and great conferences that you can come to and not only meet people like me, Bill, Winston, and Eddie, Keith Alexander, but hear a lot of good speakers, too, and enjoy fellowship among like-minded Americans. But before we get into that, we got to solve this riddle for you. And in solving this, you are going to be subjected to what I think is probably... And, Bill, I say this. When I say this, you got to understand how strong of a statement it is. When I say this is probably one of the most grotesque manifestations of political correctness that we've ever covered on this show. And you think we've done over, 700, 800 live shows, live broadcasts of the political cesspool for the past 5 years. When I say this is right there at the top of some of the most heinous manifestations of cultural Marxism that we've ever covered, you know that packs a powerful punch. But here it is. How could a medical student be suspended from college for calling himself an African-American? Well, that is because, of course, he was white. Only in America, my friends, where they say diversity is our greatest strength. Here is the story, and I'm reading it verbatim from the publishing newspaper. It originates from Mount Laurel, New Jersey. Here it goes. Are you ready for this? A former student claims in a lawsuit that the University of Medicine and Dentistry of New Jersey discriminated against him for the way he described his background in classroom discussions on cultural diversity. Paulo Cerodio said that in 2006 he told a professor and his classmates that he was white, African, and American, quote-unquote, which he says accurately reflects the fact that he was born in Mozambique but later became a U.S. citizen. He said some of his classmates and staff members at the New Jersey Medical School found it offensive that a Caucasian man would dare call himself African-American, and that the fallout led to harassment and eventually his suspension from the school. Cerodio, who lives in Newark, New Jersey, said some school employees and students told him not to describe himself as African-American. In the aftermath of his comments, Cerodio said, flyers were hung around the school mocking him, he was assaulted, and his car was vandalized. His lawyer, Greg Zeff, said Cerodio eventually was suspended for, quote, conduct unbecoming a student, end quote. The suspension came directly from his remarks made in class. All right, so, Bill, blacks in America whose ancestors hadn't set foot on the continent of Africa in 400 years since they were sold into slavery by other black Africans can say they're African-American, and by God, you better appreciate it. But someone who was actually born in Africa, who happens to be white, and immigrated here and became a U.S. citizen, if he says he's an African-American or an individual with African-American ancestry, he's suspended from school, mocked, has his car vandalized, and is physically assaulted. And the school's in on it all, by the way. Your take on it, Bill.
Africa is not a place. It's a state of mind, James. It's a state of mind. And so to be an African American, you have to be, first of all, the right color, and you have to, you know, you have to understand that you're part of something bigger than the actual continent. You know, you're part of a historical continuum. And so, you know, you can't let people from Africa trample on that. They can't be included in that any more than Steve Cohen can join the Black Congressional Caucus, you see. So, it, you know, it's all about where you build your fences and how high you build those fences and who is allowed to use certain terms and who is not allowed to use certain terms. This is the satirical nightmare we live in. If somebody had written this back during the 19th century, it would be regarded as an absurd satire on government and society. And we're actually living this. When somebody from Africa can't say they're African, African American, if they are a naturalized citizen, it's amazing, you know. And yet, okay, blacks or Muslims or anybody from the third world can move to Great Britain and call themselves British and, in fact, take over the identity of Britain and decide who is British and who is not British. And anybody can move to America from the most remote corner of the third world, from the septic tank of the third world, and they can just declare themselves American and to know more about America than the people who have settled this country and been living here generation after generation for 400 years. Because it's a state of mind that is controlled by people who intend to change identities and intend to globalize every nation in the world into a mass of unidentifiable groups. And so, you know, it's like Noel Ignatieff, the professor at Harvard University, saying that the abolition of the white race is necessary for the benefit of mankind. Well, what kind of double talk is that? I guess that's saying that white people aren't people. We're not human beings. That our abolition is good for mankind. Well, who is mankind? Who is he talking about? Who is the human race he's talking about if it doesn't include white people? Doesn't that say something about their perceptions of race?
Well, Bill, brother, let me tell you, you nailed it right there. I mean, you once again nailed. I hate to keep sounding like a broken record, but, I mean, what are we talking about here? Disconnects, double standards, hypocrisies. You're right. I mean, blacks can move to Great Britain and not only be called British, but take Lennox Lewis, a boxer. Nothing more than a boxer. He gets knighted. He's Sir Lennox Lewis and Sir Seal, you know, and all of this nonsense, but yet you got a guy like this. But I'll tell you what, he's lucky that he was only kicked out of school and had his car vandalized and it was subjected to mockery and things like this for calling himself an African-American and being white. He's certainly in a much better lot than his brothers who are in South Africa right now who are white.
Well, exactly. And, of course, there are white Africans. Even in North Africa, believe it or not, and this is for all of you Afrocentric professors out there, Algeria, Morocco, Tunisia, Libya, Egypt are all part of Africa. And in many of those countries, the people are Mediterranean, European, Caucasian, white people. And in fact, in some of those countries, if you were to say that they were black Africans, they would probably run you out of their village. I hate to tell you that, but Berbers are white Africans. And they've been there for centuries and centuries and centuries since the beginning of recorded time. So there are many whites in Africa who can claim to be Africans because they're on the same continent. Africa is not a racial state. It's the continent. Just like Asia contains white people as well as Asians. And South America contains white people as well as the Indians and mestizos. So we're talking about geography here. We're not talking about race.
Well,
if you want to talk about race, use a different term.
Certainly, the Berbers had better not come over to America and try to pull any of that nonsense on on American university, lest they suffer the same fate as Paulo Sarradio. But of course, Bill, you're right. But then again, what's right is not right in today's politically correct and turbulent times. But there you have it, folks. I mean, pretty bad stuff there. Pretty bad stuff. But we're going to turn this whole thing around and solve all of the problems of the world, and even talk about some proactive measures being taken by certain organizations and ways you can join and make a proactive difference when the political cesspool continues and concludes over the course of the next 45 minutes in this, our third hour of the evening. So sit tight, everyone. James Edwards and Bill Rowland will be back with you on the Political Cesspool radio program right after these words from our sponsors. Don't forget to check us out at thepoliticalcesspool.org. We'll be back in a flash.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
Don't let me be misunderstood. Don't let me be misunderstood.
Please don't understand me, baby.
Don't let me be misunderstood.
Don't misunderstand.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the political cesspool radio program. James Edwards, Bill Rowland here with you tonight. Winston Smith and Eddie the Bombardier Miller have the evening off. The political cesspool where... You know, a night in the political cesspool, as we say, is kind of like a night on the farm. Every meal's a banquet and every paycheck's a fortune. But one thing, you know, I do think we need to do more of is go to the mailbag more often. If it's good enough for Bill O'Reilly, you know, he does that at the end of every show. So should we, I think, especially now that we're being lumped into the same company as people like Limbaugh and Hannity, et cetera, et cetera. And we do get a lot of great mail. We get a lot of death threats and hate mail, too, but that's okay. That's part of it. But we get, I would say, at a ratio of about 10 to 1, positive, effusive email from our listening audience that certainly serves as the wind in our sails and gives us the momentum and the encouragement to do what we do on a nightly and weekly basis. And to work as many hours as we work on this show. I mean, you got to remember, we do all this in addition to full-time jobs that actually pay the bill. We do this for a cause greater than ourselves, and we wouldn't do it if it wasn't benefiting the people who we are here to fight for. And you let us know that our work means something to you by your faithful correspondence. And I want to start reading more of it on the show, first of all, because it should be shared with those of you out there in radio land, and it makes the authors of such letters and correspondence to feel good to have their stuff read on the air, and it certainly makes us feel good to read it. But I got a quick letter here also today, Bill, when I went to the mailbox, that will set us up nicely for something I'd like to have you talk about for the next few minutes. It comes from Brian, and Brian was writing us from Rison, Arkansas. And he just sent a short note to say that he hopes we're all doing well, to keep up the good work, and please call him if we could use his help. And he was kind enough to include his phone number. He goes on to say that he hopes to see us at the Council of Conservative Citizens meeting in Jackson, which, of course, we've been making passing references to for the last few minutes. We'd like to dive into it a little more deeply now. Bill, what's going on in Jackson that last weekend in June?
It is the annual Council of Conservative Citizens National Conference. Every year at the National Conference, of course, we have outstanding speakers, outstanding guests. We have great fellowship, a good time. It's a two-day conference, Friday and Saturday, last weekend in June, as you said, James. And, of course, this year our featured speaker is going to be Jared Taylor, who always gives us a great speech, a great talk, usually having to do with multiculturalism or the state of race in this country. He's always on target. He's always intelligent. He's always articulate. And, you know, it'd be worth, I don't know, you know, if he was a professional speaker, he would be getting enormous fees to come and speak just about on anything. But because he's speaking on the issues that involve our people and our culture and our race, of course, he is not going to get a huge speaking fees. He comes to do it because it's the cause he has chosen, and it's the cause that we need to hear about and that other people need to hear about. So that'll be taking place in Jackson. You can go to the Council of Conservative Citizens website. That's www.cofcc.org. That's COFCC. www.cc.org. Learn more about the conference coming up. You can email us questions about it. And also, the latest issue of the Citizens Informer, our national newspaper, has just come out, and you can request a copy of that paper also at the website. So we encourage you to do that and to get a copy of the paper. And if you're like-minded and if you believe that white people in particular need representation and need an organization pursuing the best interest of our folk and our people, you know, join us. At least subscribe to the Citizens Informer and learn what's going on in the world. Learn about some of the best writers on the subject alive today. And, of course, this issue has some great columnists and some great articles in it. And we encourage you to, once again, go to our website and look at request a copy of the Citizens Informer.
And when Bill says join us and visit our website, of course he's speaking about thepoliticalcesspool.org, but he's also speaking in this instance about cfcc.org. When he says us and our, that is because Bill and I are both members of the Board of Directors of the Council of Conservative Citizens. And in addition to that, Bill also serves as the editor of the Citizens Informer, which is the well-refined and put together newspaper publication of the Council of Conservative Citizens. And as Bill just mentioned, the latest issue of the Citizens Informer is hot off the press. You can get a copy of that by going to cfcc.org. But in addition to the great fellowship and camaraderie that you experience at coming to one of these things, I can't say strongly enough that the annual CFCC National Conference, which takes place each year in different places. We've been in recent years to Indiana, Nashville, South Carolina, Alabama a couple of times, now in Mississippi, Jackson, Mississippi, this June. It's not only the highlight of the CFCC's yearly calendar, it's also one of our annual highlights as the hosting staff of the Political Cesspool is concerned, because we do have the opportunity to meet and share time with so many like-minded people and listeners of this program. But the speakers itself of this year's conference particularly reads like the Political Cesspool guest list. So if you enjoy our program, come meet us. We'd love to meet you, but also come to meet some of your favorite guests that we've interviewed over the years. Jared Taylor, as Bill mentioned, is the keynote speaker this year, and he's been on the show a couple of dozen times over the years. Also appearing and speaking at this year's conference will be Sam Dixon, one of my all-time favorite Political Cesspool guests. Sam is always a fixture at these meetings, and you'll be able to speak with him and shake his hand. I know, Bill, you will be giving a speech, as will I. I will be appearing on a media panel alongside, you guessed it, Political Cesspool guests, Merlin Miller, the award-winning film producer, and Craig Boddicker, who has made a couple of appearances on this show in recent months, who will be promoting his DVD documentary, A Conversation About Race, which I say with no exaggeration is probably one of the most gripping and engrossing DVDs I've ever watched. You can't take your eyes off of it. He did such a great job, and it's going to be a great time for me to be on that panel with them. And then I understand, Bill, in addition to all of that and the banquet ceremony, people will have an opportunity to enjoy a free screening of A Conversation About Race by Craig Boddicker, which will be played in the Assembly Hall there in Jackson at that fine hotel the council has reserved.
That is correct. Craig will be screening his movie. Of course, he'll have copies for sale as well, and we certainly encourage those of you who are planning to attend to be there Friday evening. I think that the movie will or Craig's film will be screening probably around 7 p.m. So, you know, you don't want to miss it. It is one of the most gripping documentaries, conversational documentaries about race, and one of the best I've ever seen of any kind, regardless of subject matter. So it's beautifully done, and believe me, I don't exaggerate. I don't like using this term often, a work of art, but it really is. It's a work of art as documentary filmmaking. So come and see Craig and watch his film and take it home with you and show it to friends and share it, because nothing really narrates the racial divide in this country better than A Conversation About Race. In a sense of watching it, it's an unbiased documentary. I mean, the questions are, everybody gets the same questions. It's the answers, the difference in answers, that is striking.
And you'll have a chance to see that on top of all of the other great festivities that we've been mentioning. I know we're coming up on break, so again, the date for that, June 26th and 27th in Jackson, Mississippi. Go to cfcc.org to get more information. If you still can't find your way, go to thepoliticalcesspool.org and email me, and I'll make sure you get hooked up. We'd love to see you. We're going to talk more about it in the coming weeks leading up to that weekend in June. But before we do that, we're going to come back with another great segment right after this in tonight's edition of the Political Cesspool.
The Political Cesspool, guys. We'll be back right after these messages. Get on the show and express your opinion in the Political Cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. We gotta get out of this place.
Welcome back to the show, ladies and gentlemen. James Edwards and Bill Rowland here with you. Again, concluding our thoughts from the previous segment, we'd sure love to see you in Jackson, Mississippi later this end of next month, June 26th, 27th, go to thepoliticalcesspool.org and you can email us and we'll make sure you get all the information if you can't find it for yourself at cfcc.org. Now, going back to something we were talking about way back during the first hour with Keith Alexander, I want to hammer a little bit more on the future of the Republican Party. This is something that came up during our discussion of the Brown versus Board of Education decision and how the Republican Party has become so impotent in recent years, especially. But, and I mentioned that California is gone for good, it would appear, and that it's a very realistic possibility that the Republican Party will never again compete in a presidential election. I guess the question is, do they really want to compete? But first of all, before Bill and I hash that out, let's go through the news. And we've been hammering on this theme for years now on this radio show, and for at least a year on our blog. California is majority non-white, and as more and more Hispanics and Asians come of voting age, any hope for conservatism in California is dead. And the GOP can also kiss its 55 electoral votes goodbye for good. Non-whites vote their racial interests, and they overwhelmingly support big government. These are just the facts. Now I'll read from the story. More than 1 million immigrants became U.S. citizens last year, hastening the ethnic transformation of California's political landscape, with more Latinos and Asians now eligible to vote. Leading the way, California's 300,000 new citizens accounted for nearly one-third of the nation's total and represented a near doubling over 2006, according to a recent report by the U.S. Office of Immigration Statistics. This is, again, 1 million immigrants became official U.S. citizens last year. This isn't even beginning to cover the millions upon millions of illegal aliens. 1 million became legal last year. 300,000 of that million was in California alone. Florida recorded, probably unsurprisingly to you, the second largest group of new citizens, and Texas claimed third. Mexicans, who have traditionally registered low rates of naturalization, represented the largest group with nearly one-fourth of the total. The new citizens are reshaping California's electorate and are likely to reorder the state's policy priorities, some political analysts predict. Several polls show that Latinos and Asians are more supportive than whites of public investments and broad services, even if they require higher taxes. I know you're all shocked at that, right? Most Latinos, for instance, support all five budget propositions on the May ballot, while most whites oppose them, according to recent polls by the Public Policy Institute of California. Anyway, the story continues, but you get the gist. And Texas isn't far behind California when it comes to the ethnic and demographic changes that are taking place there. And when Texas flips, and you know it will, just like California flipped. I mean, California used to vote, conservatively. Don't get me started going down in a gray area, but Ronald Reagan won California. Never again will a Republican win California in a presidential election, but they used to. And they don't now. And this is why they don't now. And Texas is about to become the next California. When that happens, the GOP will never, ever come close to competing again for presidential election. So, Bill, the question is this. We know what could be done to change this. You enforce the laws. You get the illegal aliens out of there. You quit granting citizenship to everyone who comes in from these third world countries who are anti-American and whose cultures contradict that of the American founding stock. You nip that in the bud. America begins to go back to where we were in 1954. It's a start. But obviously the solution is a mere theory, and the practice isn't going to be employed by either of these two parties. And so the question, I guess, Bill, is this. All that being understood, do the Republican parties even care about competing again? Because in order to do so, they would have to take some stands that certainly would run afoul with their current politically correct dogma. Or are they simply content to be a support group for the regime? Are these bigwig Republican senators and lawmakers and party officials content to be a support group for the regime and collect their paychecks, keep their pensions, and keep quiet about rectifying the situation for their party's political power? Or do they really intend on winning office again? What do you think, Bill?
I think that the GOP... I think the GOP is in back position. I think that they are they're retreating to trying to find safe ground somewhere where they can turn and win again. They obviously did very poorly in terms of strategy this last election, and I just don't see that anywhere in the future that they've got a plan or a strategy for regaining the lost ground. I think that they are confused, and the only thing they know to do is what they've always done, and that is imitate and mimic the Democrats in some form or fashion.
Well, you know, I think that the modern-day Republican Party is about a half step behind the Democrats when it comes to the liberal progression that the Democrats would have us go. I mean, the Republican Party, what issue do they champion now that isn't a watered-down version of what the Democrats are touting? I mean, the Republican Party isn't standing up for the rights of the unborn. They might, their platform might have some sort of a mention that they are a pro-life party, but they've never done anything to reverse anything going on there, and they could have. We know that. So they don't stand up for the right to life. They don't stand up for securing the border. They're obviously for the war in Iraq, so they don't agree with many of us when it comes to foreign policy or immigration or trade policies. They offer little to no resistance on the gay marriage so-called debate. What issue do the Republicans have that the Democrats aren't doing better at? Taxes,
The only point that the Republicans could drive home to the electorate is the dangers that are facing our culture and our civilization in the United States, and they refuse to do so. You know, not one Republican politician, not one Republican leader, not one Republican spokesman or pundit stood up for Carrie Prejean in her fight against the homosexuals.
Yeah, can you believe that, Bill?
Came forward.
Can you believe that?
Miss California, USA, and not one Republican has the guts to stand up and say, I agree with you, Carrie.
And meanwhile, Barack Obama's...
This was an opportunity, and they missed it.
Meanwhile, Barack Obama's senior advisor is calling her a dog on national public radio, no less. Where are the Republicans? This is supposed to be a Republican issue, am I wrong? Where the hell are they?
And the Republicans didn't respond to David Axelrod either. You see, they're hiding in some trench somewhere, waiting for the right time to come out, sitting in this trench, holding their knees and shaking and quivering like little wet kittens. And they don't know what to do. That is because they failed the electorate in this last election. There is not one Republican politician who has the guts to stand up to this administration because they believe wrongly that Obama and the Democrats are unassailable. Essentially, they're tying a white flag to a pole and are ready to raise it. Now, I don't know at what point they intend to turn around, but what's going to happen from this is that contributions to the Republican Party from ordinary people are going to drop off. A lot of the Republican clubs that operate to bring forward new candidates are going to die off because they don't pick the right people. And look at the head of the party. Why did they pick Michael Steele? Because he was black, not because he was qualified, not because he's the best spokesman for the Republicans. They picked him for he was black. They can't get beyond the most shallow point of an issue. They will not go into deep water with their own constituency.
Hey, Bill, I got one for you. And we're going to go to the phones right after this next commercial break. And in our final segment, we're going to take a call or two. So sit tight if you're on the phones. But I got one for you, Bill. And I'm not going to go out on much of a limb and say this because I've got some proof to back this up. If there was a potential Republican candidate that would come forth right now and invest himself in this Kerry Prejean debate and do exactly what you said, Kerry, I am with you. This party stands up for traditional values and conservative principles, and I am with you, and I'm going to fight for you if no one else will. That would be the Republican presidential candidate in 2012. And if you don't believe me, or he would at least be the front runner right now, and if you don't believe me, look in Alabama, Bill, where Judge Roy Moore, who took the righteous stand on the Ten Commandments, he is the front runner to be Alabama governor right now. Is that accurate?
That's correct. But do you think the Republican Party is going to embrace Judge Moore? Do you think that they're really going to pour
out in
numbers and they're going to say, this is a man who can, you know, restore us to some degree of dignity in the United States? They won't do it. They will denounce Roy Moore just as they denounced Ron Paul and just as they denounce or at least ignore the best possible candidate.
We've got to go to break. We're going to talk more about it right after this.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
We gotta get out of this place. If it's the last thing we ever do, we gotta get out of this place. Girl, there's a better life for me.
If I didn't tell her, I didn't. Welcome back. To get on the Political Cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free, at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. We've got a few minutes left in tonight's broadcast, and we're going to go to the phones to Missouri and to New York in just a moment. Bill's right. Certainly, if a righteous Republican would come forth, if there is such a thing left, and make such a stand. Yeah, of course he would be sabotaged by his own party the same way Ron Paul was, the same way Pat Buchanan was in 1996. I'm not so sure Pat Buchanan didn't beat Bob Dole, truth be known, but that's another story. I should rephrase, this man, hypothetically speaking, would not probably be their nominee, but he would certainly have the popular opinion behind him of Republican voters, as Ron Paul did last time. But I, in truth still being told, yes, Bill's right also that we've got to focus on state government. And I do believe that Roy Moore has a better than good shot at being the next governor of Alabama. The Republican Party will write him off as the next George Wallace because he dared to stand up and defend the Ten Commandments. But I think he wins Alabama, Bill. What do you think?
I think that if the poll numbers are correct, and these polls suggest that he's got as much as 60-65% support in Alabama, that he will certainly win. And, of course, this is going to shake up politics all over the country because, as you know, James, what's going to happen is the liberal media, the liberal press is going to descend on Alabama like it was the march over the Edmund Pettus Bridge all over again, except they're going to be gunning for Roy Moore. They're going to be hounding him persistently and relentlessly throughout his entire term as governor.
And what did he do? What did he do to deserve that?
Oh, well, of course he stood up for Christianity, and he stood up for doing the right thing. And he has not backed down from any of those positions. And his failure to act like a miserable coward is what makes the liberals and the liberal media despise him. And, of course, that's exactly what endears him to the people of Alabama. And I think his support even crosses racial lines. I think that that he even has a significant black support in Alabama. But even that were not so, he's the best man for the job. He's also the best man to express and to push for greater state sovereignty and much tougher interpretation of the 10th Amendment. And that is going to be absolutely critical in the next 4 years to the survival of this country as a civilized nation. And I do not exaggerate that. We are facing a Bolshevik revolution in this country. We are facing totalitarian leftist socialism. And unless some politicians stand up against it, we'll be brought under the worst tyranny in the Western world.
Well, we will keep a close watch on all of those developments, and certainly the developing candidacy, the fledgling candidacy of Judge Roy Moore for Alabama governor. We'll watch that very closely. Let's go to the phones and the waning amendments we have left in the order that they came in to our engineer. Let's go to Clint in Missouri. Clint, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. How y'all doing tonight?
We're hanging in there, Clint. How you doing, buddy?
Mrs. Bushwhacker's cracking the whip. Danny Wayne's coding.
Bill and I can relate.
Hey, real quick, I had something to say, but, you know, I want to touch on something really quick. You said that, or Bill said, somebody said that they will call Judge Roy Moore the next Wallace. I hope they do, because that would be the best thing they could call him right now.
Yeah, I said that. I mean, I'm just drawing a comparison. I think that, I mean, sure, why not? He's from Alabama. He's taking a stand that the conservatives of Alabama are in support of. I mean, it's easy to draw the comparison.
And in Missouri, we just passed the HB 361, which is basically says Missouri will not participate in the Real ID Act. It passed the House, and it just passed the Missouri Senate unanimously. Now we're waiting on to see whether the governor is going to sign it or not.
You know, and see, this is the point. And even we, I think, sometimes fail to really dig up the good news and bring it forth on this program. There is good news out there, such as the candidacy of Roy Moore, as we've been talking about. I know a lot of times we focus on some of the negative things because we have to provide people with an education about some of these issues and how to combat them. And a lot of times when you're talking about combating something, it's obviously something that you're in opposition to. But there is good news out there still, but you would never know about it. You would never know, Clint, as
right.
I didn't, that encouraging development that you just mentioned from Missouri, the candidacy of Roy Moore. This is stuff that the mainstream media will never, ever let be known.
Well, the reason I called, I hate to give good news and then go back to bad news.
Well, it's a cesspool. What can you do?
Put very aptly, yes. You know, somebody asked the question, where is the Republican Party going? Well, I guess I would say probably the same place the Constitution Party's going, because I've been keeping up with this whole Edgar Steele issue out in Idaho.
Gosh.
And we've communicated a little bit, and we all emailed these people. I just want to tell everybody on the show that nobody from the Constitution Party National Headquarters returned my email. The Western States Area Chairman returned my email and basically said that Paul Venable was a good man. Maybe I should talk to him about it. And we communicated to each other on that and found out that it was a chain email that he sent out. It was just a form email.
Yep.
Okay, so I contacted Paul Venable about it. I was very respectful. I said, sir, you know, you're the Constitution Party. And in order to be the Constitution Party, you're going to have to honor the principles of the Constitution and the Founding Fathers. And if you truly believe that, you will let Edgar Steele in. And if you disagree that much with his views, then you always have the right to run against him. That would be the honorable thing to do.
What did he do, tell you to go to hell?
I never heard from him. But I went to Edgar Steele's website, nickelrant.com, and he had pictures.
Yeah.
Where I guess he actually went to the state, I believe it was a state committee meeting, or perhaps it was a county one. But one of the Constitution Party bigwigs was there, and he had his application, which had rejected in big red letters on it. And, you know, I can't remember her name, Krakowski or something like that. She told him, you have no rights. Well, in his nickel rant, he told how Paul Venable got to be the state chairman. He bussed in people, they filled out an application, and they voted for Paul Venable. So when Edgar Steele tried to do the same thing, they said, no, you have no rights.
Yeah, well, no, absolutely. And, Yeah, it's sad. We covered this. Obviously, Ed Steele was on the show for about an hour and a half a couple of weeks ago, and I've sadly followed the progression of this thing. And, yeah, I mean, I think it goes without saying now that the Constitution Party has proven that they are no more worthy of our support than the Republican Party. And I voted for Chuck Baldwin last time, but I will certainly be withholding my support, and I would encourage the listening audience of this radio program to withhold their support of the Constitution Party if they are going to engage in actions no better than the Republican Party when it comes to the discrimination against the people,
well, really,
the
there's
only
no
people who
vote
them for
them. Republican Party. The Republican Party says that they're for states' rights, they're for the Constitution, they're pro-life.
Yeah. Well, that's
and
a joke.
When the rubber hits the road, they're not. They duck their heads, and the rubber just hit the road for the Constitution Party.
Yeah, well, they're. I mean, you know, they're a joke anyway. Nobody votes for them except for me, and you know, so now I guess they lost their only voter. But I mean, they're not even they're a non-issue, I guess, really. But it's just sad to see them taking themselves so seriously. I mean, Ed could probably bring more members to the Constitution Party of Idaho than they have in every state party west of the Mississippi. But
you know,
nevertheless,
I would propose this question: who is Paul Venable really working for? Because to me, it seems like he entered a grassroots organization to make sure it gets destroyed.
Well, this is one thing that's the truth. There is no organization too small that the powers that be won't be working to subvert it. But, you know, you bring up a good point. We don't have the time tonight, Clint, but I appreciate you bringing it up again. And people need to go check that out at nickelrant.com. In fact, I'll post it over on the Cesspools blog on our website. But we'll continue to follow it. But, yeah, there obviously wasn't a positive resolution to that whole ordeal. But thank you for the call, Clint.
All right. We'll see y'all later.
And we've only got about 2 minutes left, but I want to be sure to get to our friend Jim in New York. Jim, are you with us?
Hello.
Are you there, Jim?
Hey, how are you guys?
Bill.
Yes.
Clint, anybody?
Yes,
hello.
Jim's
hello.
On the line. He's on the line.
I'm on
Go
the
ahead,
line.
Jim. Go ahead, hello. Jim. We can hear you. Go ahead.
Oh,
all right, Jim, you're on the line.
All right. How you doing, guys?
Hanging in there in the waning seconds here, my friend. How are you tonight?
Yes, I'm all right. That idiot that called in earlier that mentioned that talk show host from New York's name, you gotta understand, this is a little thing that they do on the program. They try to prank phone call as many other talk shows as possible, and it gives these pimply-faced teens their 15 minutes of fame on this man's show as they all giggle like little children over spoofing or pranking some other phone or some other talk show.
Well, so, Jim, you know. I guess that's what happened tonight. It happens once in a blue moon. We've only got 5 seconds left, Jim. I hate that we ran out of time. Please call us back next week. We are flat out of it for tonight, though. I am so sorry. We'll be back next week, everybody.
Thanks for joining us tonight in the Political Cesspool. To learn more about us or to make a donation to keep this program on the air, go to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.